show again. Hurrah!
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the new Panic Room. It's the show other shows want to be, and the show that authors want to be on. The all-new Panic Room radio show is brought to you by HellboundBooks.com.
Well, good evening, one and all. Yes, it is the new Panic Room episode 254 on the, oh, good Lord, it's the 11th of November, Veterans Day, so... a poignant day indeed. So it is, and here we are again, and the clock's went back, and I'm absolutely fried. My brain is still on the old time. It always takes me a while, and I'm just so tired. So hopefully it's going to be a whole humdinger of a show, and Xtina is going to be able to keep me awake. So I'm going to have to bring her on for a nod off. Just me that's tired. I mean, I just the adjustment thing, because it's tummy time. It's sort of coming up to 11 o'clock, which is way past my bedtime. It really is.
I don't understand.
There you go. That is my argument against daylight savings time. So just stop it.
You've seen the memes about them that talk about, somebody's lying here because, how can we have 1 hour difference and it's like midnight by 7 p.m.? I mean, it's like, even me, I'm like, I used to stay up late. Oh, it's a puppy.
Yeah, even the dog's pissed off about it. Shit it.
Yeah.
Who's yipping at? That's the problem. We've got so many dogs now. And actually it occurred to me, as the puppies are getting pretty big now. I mean, they're almost as tall as Mama, which is scary because they're still only 4 months old. And actually occurred to me, if I for some reason stopped feeding them or whatever, they could just turn on me. And I wouldn't stand a chance. Seriously, wouldn't stand a chance. All of them suddenly decide to, let's eat Dad for a bit of shits and giggles. I'm done. I mean, I'm just like, I let them out in the backyard and they come in and they all jump all over me on the sofa. It's just like, I mean, it's really sweet because they're absolutely sweethearts. But yeah, it's a sobering thought. Or if I died in the night, for example, they'd find me. They'd find me in a few days' time. We sort of most of me eaten and stuff. So there's that to look for. I saw one of the, I think I've told you before, I saw this show, Fatal Attractions it's called, and it's about people who have exotic pets. That basically kill them. And there was one guy who had Nile monitors, and these are big lizards. I mean, these things get to 6 or 7 foot long at least. And he had about two or three of these things, and they just used to wander around the apartment. Yes. He didn't turn up for work, and they got a bit worried after a few days, and finally they broke into his apartment. And they think one of them had sort of bitten him like a week or so earlier, and these things, he got sepsis, so giving him sepsis, and he'd sort of got sicker and sicker and then collapsed. And these things had eaten most of him. They'd literally disemboweled him and they'd eaten most of his fat. They just absolutely had it. Because obviously they weren't being fed, so well, what are we going to eat? Oh, he'll do. And apparently he was still alive when they started on him. So,
Awful. I'm always thinking of our exotic pets, you know, the ball pythons. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, I still say, and I hope I'm not wrong about this, but, you know, even when Misha gets full size in Sal, you know, when they get full size, I still think, you know, we'd be able to overpower them because they're not really that big.
Oh,
I think you'd be okay.
unless they ganged up together. They sort of ganged up together to pick on you. My ball python. He's I've had him years now. He's probably about 4.5 foot fully, and he's pretty thick and pretty powerful. But yeah, he wouldn't be a problem. The big snake, he could kill me. I mean, I have no illusions about that whatsoever. If he got out and decided he was hungry, he could, because he's big enough to kill someone. But in fact, there's been a case over in England, a pit bull breed savaged or killed like a 9-year-old boy. And of course, he's dug up all the thing about pit bulls and, you know, their opinion writer is, you know, it's a dangerous breed and da 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 da. But they're not. You know, it was obviously raised to be dangerous, you know.
My only argument about that is that, you know, we have the little ankle biters here, and they accidentally bit Christian once, and, you know, he's still got a scar from it, but, you know, he didn't die because they're just little things, you know. So if the pit bull bites you, and even if it's an accident, he could do some damage. So, you know, that's all. That's my argument. Is that
you could say that with any dog. We have a pit bull, and we've had her since she was 5 weeks old, and she's been raised, you know, not to be mean. She's been raised in a loving, you know, house with her. She's great with dogs. She's great with kids. I mean, her only thing, she likes to climb on you. So you've got this 60-pound pit bull deciding she wants to sort of, because we had a thunderstorm this morning, so she's crawled onto me, she's clinging to me, and I'm sat there on the couch, she just wouldn't, but it is, I mean, you know, but people, they deliberately, you know, from being puppies, teach them to be aggressive, and she's not got an aggressive bone in her body, you know, for me, it blows the myth of, ooh, killer breed. Chihuahuas are evil. Chihuahas are raised in the pit of hell. Chihuahas are just the most evil, nasty, vicious creatures on the planet. Just Tasmanian devils are scared of Chihuahuas, to be honest with you.
If Chihuahuas were bigger, they would sure do a lot more damage, but they can't.
If Chihuahuas got to 50, 60 pounds, then they would rule the planet.
It's true, yeah.
Yeah,
but,
so...
We do have the two little ones. Well, we have three, but the old one doesn't really, you know, care about a whole lot, but... you know, the two girls, they go at it, and sometimes if you're in between, you might get bit yourself or something, but it's not going to, you know, that bite isn't going to kill you. It might hurt a little bit, but it's not going to kill you. But, you know, a big, you know, pit bull, even an accident could, I suppose. You know, I definitely think that...
I'm not sure how you would get bit by accident unless you're doing something stupid. I mean, you know. Really?
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. I could be wrong. I've never been. The only time I felt teeth is when we're playing tug toys, and she, you know, I mean, any of the dogs will do it. You know, my dog when I was a kid did it occasionally. You know, you just grab to get a better hold of the tug toy and get your finger by mistake. That's it. And
Omega
did that with it when she was almost still only a wee thing, And she was playing with this rope tug thing with India and with my daughter and got her thumb because she's still India. She was in tears. She was like, oh, you know, because the dog wouldn't let, she got a good grip of the rope thing. So she was not going to let go. And I couldn't do anything for laughing, to be honest.
That's awful.
But, yeah, I know. I know.
Yeah. But they're great. Dogs are great. And so are snakes. So are snakes, you know.
Yeah.
Although I did tell you about Sal going for me the other day.
Mm-hmm.
It was feeding night last night, and he grabbed that. You know, I'm still wondering, am I feeding him too small? Like, are these meals too small for him? Because he just acts like he's hungry, you know, two or three days before feeding day. And then he's fast. He just, you know, strikes at it so fast. And it hit the ground. And he still, you know, lunged at it. He's like, I'm getting this thing. And
dinner. Yeah.
So, yeah. So he's definitely violent. So when he went to strike, I'm kind of confused because it definitely wasn't the strike that he does when he gets his dinner. It's like it was like a half a strike. Maybe he realized it, you know, after he started or something, because it wasn't his full on violent strike. But at the same time,
ball pythons are known for it. Yeah, when I first got Monty, and I got a little how to look after them book, and they said they said make sure you got a long pair of tweezers because they are very aggressive, very violent when they're feeding. And yeah, they are. I mean, he's got them. Monty, even now, he goes for it like it's you know, and he wraps around it and does all of that, and it's fascinating to. But they say, you know, for size, I mean, you can feed them. I think the size is to the thickest point or something, you know. So you could probably up his feeding.
I'm wondering. We just went up though. We just went up one. So you know, who knows? Maybe he's. You know, he could just be one of those, like, you know. I don't know. They just say they're opportunistic eaters. Maybe he's just always ready, you know. Just
well, pythons are. I mean, they are. They're designed to you know, if there's food about, because they can equally go a long time without it. So they're designed as food about. I'm gonna grab that. I'm gonna have me a bit of that. You know?
Yeah. Speaking of, Misha's been 6 weeks now with no food. It's very sad. It makes us very
fine.
Sad. Yeah.
He'll be fine. So, enough. So we need to do a whole show on snakes. I think, you know, there's a snake corner we need to do. So So anyway, do we have anything else going on the show? Or is it just you and me talking about snakes all night?
We do. We have a great show tonight, and I'm excited. We have Kevin Lucia on the show. I think we had him last year, maybe. I can't remember exactly when we had him on before. And later on in the show, we'll have our, you know, Jeff Strand back. This year has not
it's
been
the Jeff
year
Strand
Jeff
show.
Strand, I'm very
Welcome
sad
to the
about
Jeff
that.
Strand
yeah.
Show.
So yeah, we have a great show with two, you know, wonderful horror writers, and I can't wait to talk some horror with them. Yeah.
Well, I think we should do that. Cause I watched a horror movie the other day, and it was what in all things that is holy did I just sit and watch?
I saw that post. Yeah.
Yeah, I posted it on, and I don't often take to Facebook on such matters. And it's a French movie called Titane, and it wasn't what I was expecting, and it was like. What? Seriously, I got to the end of it. And what the fuck was that? I mean, what? Seriously, what happened?
I'll stay away from that one.
Don't bother. It's over 2 hours of. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's just. I'm speechless. Absolutely speechless. You know, but, so I think I'll bring our first guest on. I think we'll talk some horror.
All right, first guest of the night, we have horror writer Kevin Lucia. Woo!
Hello!
Hello!
Kevin, how are you, sir?
Good. How are you?
I'm okay. I'm still, as I said on the intro there, I'm still battling with the clocks going back thing and all of that, and it does weird things to my circadian rhythm, unfortunately. But how are you doing? You coping with the whole thing? Okay.
Yeah, it was funny when you said this is a little bit after your bedtime, because it's a little bit after my bedtime too. But I normally go to bed early. So I can get up early to write. So, but yeah, I'm doing all right.
Good. Yeah, I tend to be. I'm an early riser. I think we, you know, having to get up for the kids' school and what. I'm just programmed now. No matter what, I'm awake at 6. We have puppies as well, so they're ready for up as well. I get up and so I'm up. but as a consequence now it's tummy time. It's nearly 11 o'clock and I'm flagging. I've had a long day. I had to do an online defensive driving course because I got caught doing a little bit over the speed limit a month or two back, and so I had to do that. So that was like having my brain, you know, sieved through my nostrils. It's just like, oh God! But to be fair, the only reason I didn't just pay the fine was because I didn't want to take my insurance, you know. So otherwise, I would have just take my $200. I don't. It is. It's just 6 hours of mental torture.
Well, Kevin is here to talk to us about his book, October Nights, Halloween, A Night Both Wondrous and Terrifying in Equal Measure. Tell us a little bit about it. I know. I just love Halloween.
It's a collection of four Halloween novellas. They're all standalone stories, but they do have crossover elements. So you read one, then you read the next one, and by the time you've gotten to the end, they kind of connect together in very subtle ways. I was really happy to be able to get the project out in time. I've always wanted to write something for Halloween, and either the timing was never right on my end, or the timing was never right on the Joe Meinhardt's end for Crystal Lake, and somewhere around spring last year, I said, hey, I've got several Halloween stories in progress. How are we looking for next year? And he said they had a slot open, it was a lot of fun to write, and he's been getting a good reception, so I'm really happy about that. And it takes place in all my books take place like in the same kind of mythical little fictional little town. So it takes place in the same town of Clifton Heights, New York. So yeah. I think they're all very different stories, too. Yeah.
I recognize that name, I think. Maybe I'm thinking of Clifton Springs. Is it close, maybe? I don't know.
There's a Clifton Park in New York, and there is a Clifton Springs. Clifton Heights, is, as far as I know, is completely made up. At least I hope it is.
Okay.
If I ever see a sign, in the Adirondacks for Clifton Heights, I'm not going there.
I absolutely love Halloween stuff and Halloween stories and Halloween movies. I love all the holidays I do, but there's just something about the spooky and the scary, and I just embrace all of it. And I'm a little disappointed this year that I did not watch as many scary and movies as I wanted to. But I did watch the Halloween Kills and the one right before that one. I can't remember what that one was called.
Yeah,
I think it was just Halloween.
Yeah.
I saw some posts on Facebook about it's garbage. Don't watch it. And I didn't hate it. I can't say that it was my favorite movie or anything, but I definitely didn't think it was the worst thing. It was a good slasher film, I think. And what else do I want in those? It did what it was supposed to do. I think I even jumped a few times, so I liked it.
I didn't get around to watching it, and I'm one of these people. I'm gonna have to wait till next year. I can't. It's like I can't watch. I can't watch Christmas movies unless it's Christmas. I just can't. Right. I honestly, I'll watch it at Christmas, so I'm just not. So I'll have to wait till next year to watch it, and there'll probably be another one by then. So.
But see, I kind of am like that when it comes to Christmas movies. But you know, you can watch scary stuff all year round. You don't have to wait till.
Yeah, but if it's themed.
Okay,
I don't know, maybe I'm partially OCD or something, but I just can't. If it's got a theme to it, I know.
Yeah,
I would have
to
agree with that. I watch all my Halloween movies. I start watching Halloween theme movies like from September 1st, and then after Halloween, I'll go back to my regular scary movies. But yeah, I do reserve the Halloween movies for those 2 months right there.
So you're one of these people, Kevin, that has your Christmas tree up on the 1st of November, aren't you?
No, but my wife is already watching the Hallmark Christmas movie.
No.
Well, you know, it's give and take. She's bore up with my horror Halloween movie since September 1st, so now control of the remote goes over to her.
Oh, dear, man. The Hallmark movies, No.
I watched, I think it's called Last Christmas, last year, with that chick who played in the Game of Thrones movies. She was the mother of dragons. She did a cute little rom-com Christmassy movie last year, and I loved it. I ended up watching it twice, and, you know, I didn't cry or anything because I would never cry in movies.
Mm-hmm.
But, no, I did. I bawled like a baby. I did that. I watched it twice. Yeah, no, and he was saying he started watching Halloween movies the September 1st, and that's when I had my Halloween decorations out. Yay.
Yes, it is.
Yeah,
so, yes, it is.
And I'm trying to get the Christmas ones out, but the boyfriend says absolutely no way, not until December 1st. And, well, at least I have to wait until after Thanksgiving, and I'm not happy about it, but... yeah, but what are you going to do, right? But I do have
it is scary that Christmas is just looming.
Yeah,
it's just so, it's just like, how did that happen? Seriously.
Yeah, I don't know. But I'm excited, though, because I go into a store and they're playing Christmas music and I get so excited. And, of course, the boyfriend's like, oh, God. And he's definitely the Grinch right now. And I'm like, oh, my God, it's the most wonderful time of the year. And I can't contain myself. And, you know, he's just groaning. And I'm like, but it is the most wonderful time of the year.
Well, as you know, I hate Christmas music. There's one Christmas song that I can tolerate. All the rest, I just hate it. Really hate it.
I love that all. I do. But let's get back to October and Halloween. And I think Kevin had an excerpt to read for us.
Yes, I do.
Yay! It's my favorite part because I can sit back with a glass of wine and listen to a good reading. It's nice.
Okay. Let's see. It shouldn't be too long. So I'll preface the reading just a little bit. All the novellas take place either leading up to Halloween or on Halloween night. And like I said, all of them have a fairly, pretty different tones. You know, one of them is a pretty classic ghost story. Another one is more of a Twilight Zone twist to it. The very last story is a little more action-paced. The third novella is called The Last Will and Testament of the Not-So-Good Reverend Ford. And it's about a minister who is running away from his past, running away from his... his mistakes, and he feels like he's failed and let his family down. He's also trying to deal with the fallout of his oldest daughter's death, a death that he feels responsible for. And his flight has brought him to Clifton Heights, where he's just renting a cabin and trying to stay there for a couple of days and trying to sort his problems out. But as he's there, you know, things start happening. Things get, you know, I don't want too many spoilers, but, you know, strange supernatural things start happening. It's kind of like forcing him back to, in you know, face all these things he's running away from. And one of the things that he thinks he's seeing is he thinks he's seeing different versions of his daughter, his dead daughter, at different times of her life throughout town. Like, you know, spotting her on the sidewalk, seeing her in the store or something like that, or, you know, and in this excerpt, he's out walking and he comes to like the local, they have like a local scare house that they run every year at Halloween. And he thinks he sees his daughter in line, so he gets in line to go through the scare house. And needless to say, he has a much different experience than everyone else. So I shall begin reading.
Okay.
After I ate, I walked the streets, enjoying the various Halloween decorations of the homes and shops. Over the past few days, like a great slumbering beast finally waking, Clifton Heights' Halloween spirit was coming alive. Jack-o'-lanterns flickered on more and more porches. Front lawns were transformed in diverse tableaus of the macabre. Zombies rising from graves, mummies lurching from coffins, ghosts hanging from trees, and contemporary monsters like Jason Voorhees, Freddy Krueger, and Michael Myers lurked about. Some houses went all out, featuring huge animatronic skeletons, witches, and evil clowns in their front yards. Others offered simpler fare, black and orange streamers, cardboard black cats, amiable ghosts, and friendly jack-o'-lanterns in windows. One lawn celebrated Dia de los Muertos, with an extravagant ofrenda offering bouquets of red, orange, and yellow marigolds, bowls of food, items I assume belong to the dead, and mannequins decorated as an exquisite, elegant Katrina, flanking the ofrenda. As I traveled Clifton Heights sidewalks, listening to my shoes scuffing concrete and crunching brittle autumn leaves, I felt both pleasure and sadness as I took in the sights. Lily would have loved all this. She always begged us to drive around town during the Halloween season so she could see the neighbors' decorations. Of course, Beth wouldn't hear of it. No matter how many times I broached the matter behind closed doors with my wife, my oldest son reprimanded Lily, saying it was dangerous to enjoy something so worldly. My youngest told Lily it would be boring. I, of course, said nothing. I could have taken her myself, picked her up from school early, or we could have sneaked out on a weekend. But if anyone saw us, it wouldn't have looked good to the congregation. Their pastor driving his daughter around to look at all the pagan Halloween decorations. So, of course, I never did. As I randomly turned onto Clinton Avenue, I heard a gentle murmur, which sounded like a crowd talking and waiting anxiously for something to begin. Down the avenue, I saw a line of people on the sidewalk in front of a stately old Victorian house. It was the most lavishly decorated of all the Halloween exhibits I'd seen so far. Fake spider webs draped the siding. Different kinds of animatronics hung out of every front window. Witches, vampires, zombies, evil clowns, and evil little girls. I craned my head to look around the crowd and saw the front lawn made over into a meticulous rendition of a graveyard, replete with zombies bursting from the ground. Draped across the front porch, a banner read in garish horror font, Feldposh Horror House. I smiled sadly, thinking how much Lily would have loved going into a scare house such as this. She'd never broached the subject, probably didn't dare to, but somehow I knew houses like these and scare parks would have been right up her alley. I stumbled to a halt and stared, my hands shaking in my pockets, my mouth hanging open slightly as an invisible hand squeezed my heart. At the doorway, a woman wearing white face paint and vampire fangs, dressed in a tattered Victorian dress splattered with fake blood, admitted groups into the scare house. She looked as if she could have stepped straight from an Anne Rice novel. Though I couldn't hear her words clearly, She spoke with a grandiose tone and gestured emotively, so I assumed she was playing her role to the hilt as she admitted customers. It wasn't her I was staring at, however. It was Lily, again. This Lily looked like she was maybe 19. She'd moved out of her punk phase into what looked like a more original phase. Hair dyed a bright pink, wearing an obscure anime t-shirt cut at the midriff, which would have driven my wife crazy, and cargo pants. This Lily giggled, laughed, and bounced on her toes in excitement, seemingly unable to keep still. She seemed manic as she chatted with her friends as they waited their turn to enter Felposh House. Expression animated, eyes wide and gleaming, white teeth flashing as she talked excitedly. She fairly vibrated with energy. The Victorian vampire mistress gestured grandly at the front door. Lily and friends squealed and, clutching each other, clambered in the darkness beyond. I joined the line and waited my turn. I wasn't sure what the point of this was. Lily and her friends, if that really was Lily, were at least 20 people before me. By the time I entered Felposh House, she and her group would be through and well on their way. Even so, I felt compelled to follow her, even if at a distance, which, of course, replicated my parenting of her, always at a safe distance. 20 minutes later, a young man dressed in remarkably authentic period dress and makeup, which had transformed into the hunchback of Notre Dame, accepted my $20 admission fee and secured a paper wristband on me. 10 minutes later, I stood on the porch with four guys, receiving the Victorian vampire mistress's over-the-top introduction. I listened with only half an ear, staring into the doorway's darkness, where Lily had disappeared 30 minutes before. The Victorian vampire said something ridiculously overwrought, then gestured us toward the doorway. I strode forward, ignoring those who followed me. I stepped into darkness. The others followed, muttering to each other, apparently friends. Their banter sounded good-natured, but predictably edgy. They expected a good time, but they sounded nervous also. I felt nothing, and it made me sad. I should have been enjoying this. Heart pounding, adrenaline flowing, breath short and rapid. Instead, it felt like one more thing I was compelled to do, whether I wanted to or not. The door slammed shut behind us, plunging the hallway into absolute darkness. My fellow travelers shouted and swore, laughing shakily and complaining with mirth. I stood there and said nothing. A low, wailing moan drifted down the hall toward us, clearly from hidden speakers, but the others reacted with the expected shouts. As the wail faded, dim green lights flared to life on the walls, filling the corridor with their haze. Impatient and not willing to wait for those behind me, I plunged ahead, consumed by the irrational notion that somewhere in here, Lily was trapped and only I could save her. My quick strides left the others behind. I felt sure they'd be grateful because my absence would allow them to enjoy themselves without having a stranger in their midst. For my part, I wasn't about to let others slow me down. The corridor stretched on forever, longer than seemed possible. Garish, horrific portraits hung on the walls, scenes of torture and bloodshed straight from Gustave Doré's portrait of hell, but I ignored them all. I also ignored the fake spiders and bats attached to the walls and ceiling. As I approached a closed door to my right, I clenched my fist in anticipation. The door slammed open and a werewolf leaped out, snarling, saliva drooling from its maw. In daylight, it probably looked fake. Its fur stiff and artificial, and its maw and fangs rubbery and manufactured. But in the hall's garish green glow, it looked real, and the body was dragging behind it. Its head lolled over. In the surreal green lining, I saw 8-year-old Lily, her dead, staring face. Her throat was torn open, exposing pink flesh and white gristle. My previous indifference dissolved, replaced by real, heart-squeezing fear. Can't save her. Not ever. I wasn't sure if the werewolf said that, really. It spoke mostly in guttural snarls and yips. However, as I glanced from the dead and mauled 8-year-old Lily to the werewolf, I saw the truth in its blazing yellow eyes, eyes which looked too real. I couldn't save her. Ever. The werewolf roared at me again. I couldn't help flinching. In glee, the werewolf pointed its snout to the ceiling and howled. Then it yanked 8-year-old Lily and dragged her back through the doorway. The door slammed shut. I heard it through the door, thick and wet whipping sounds, chewing, slurping, feeding. My stomach twisted. I lurched forward, but no matter how fast I stumbled to the hallway's end, the sound of feeding followed. I saw countless versions of Lily die that night. Somewhere in the back of my mind, I understood my trip through Fell Posh Horror House couldn't have taken that long. It couldn't possibly have so many rooms. It couldn't possibly be so big. And I was utterly alone. The others in my group never caught up with me, nor did I run into any other groups. I also knew that if anyone else was in this house besides me, they weren't seeing what I saw. I am sure they were treated to all the cliche elements of a scare house. Monsters, ghouls, and demons played by half-hearted local actors, and decorations which would look ridiculous in the daylight. My visions of torment were for me alone. 8-year-old Lily devoured by a werewolf behind a closed door. Next, in a lavish boudoir, which I knew couldn't exist in this house, an adult Lily lay prone on a voluminous bed of white, wearing a white gown, staring sightlessly at the ceiling while a woman ravaged her neck, feeding hungrily on her flesh and blood. The woman paid no attention to me as she ate and drank, as bright arterial blood squirted from Lily's neck in crimson fountains. Next, in a blood and gore-splattered operating theater, a mad doctor, which looked dishearteningly like my wife Beth, frantically injected a bright green fluid through an impossibly long needle into 16-year-old Lily's neck. Blood and glowing green fluid spurted from the injection point. Lily thrashed in a bone-wrenching seizure, arms flopping and legs jerking, head whipping back and forth, face contorted in pain unimaginable, dead eyes wide and empty. I saw baby Lily, naked, screaming, with a vaguely satanic symbol painted on her belly in blood, in the hands of red-robed cultists in a dimly lit grotto. I didn't question how a grotto could be so authentically replicated in a house. The question was moot by then. They placed my crying baby on an altar, and I turned my head as the cultist chanting rose to a crescendo, because I knew if I saw the knife plunge into my little girl, I would truly indeed go mad. Baby Lily screamed once, then fell silent. As I stumbled blindly past, I knew I couldn't deny that two of the cultists, whose faces I glimpsed under their hoods, had looked like Beth and I. In another room, in a field under the stars, which made no sense, a pack of zombies chased down a screaming 18-year-old Lily with neon green hair. She never had a chance. In no more than four or five strides, the zombies, fast, ravenous, decaying, ligaments and organs pulsing through their tattered skin, pounced on Lily and dragged her to the ground. Shattered and broken teeth dug into her flesh and tore out muscle in great bloody chunks. She disappeared beneath their withered and gray limbs, her screams quickly replaced by the sounds of their frenzied feeding. Zombies, which, despite their decayed and ruined features, looked hauntingly like members of my old congregation. It went on, much longer than was possible. Uncountable versions of my dead daughter. Gonna cut me off?
Yeah, I wanted you to keep going because I wanted to get to the end of it, but we have to for time. But okay. Wow, I definitely want to.
I was enjoying that. it's very poignant that I took my daughter to our first Halloween haunted house thing. So I was there. I was reliving it. Thank you. It was great.
I do love scare houses, although I screamed the whole time. But the last one I went to was with my son, who was, I think he was either 15 or 16 at the time. And I was laughing so hard because he was screaming like a little girl. And, you know, just there's nothing better than when you're, you know, and he's like 6'1 and, you know, 200 right. pounds. And, you know, he was the little girl and it was great. It was. I spent more money.
I'll just tell you this little bit. Because my daughter, she went, she sort of dressed up and put all the sort of scary makeup on and that. And we were actually going through this house and she scared a couple of people as well. So this group of full grown ass men walked around the corner and saw her and jumped. It was like a golden moment. It really was.
That's you know, she's going to be one badass little girl. Yeah. But no, I love that, Kevin. I did. And when you make out my signed copy, that's XTINA.
Oh, dear me.
I will let you. I have a shipment coming here soon. So
she's shameless. Shameless, you are. How embarrassing.
I am. I love Halloween. But tell us what you're working on now, Kevin.
I'm currently working on a novella. So the last year or so I've been writing novellas on commission for Cemetery Dance Publications. They have a program called Make Me a Star, where their collectors can actually order a book with them as one of the characters, and they fill out this really extensive survey, CB hires people to write the novellas. So that's what I'm currently working on right now. And then when I finish that, I have to turn my attention to my final draft of a epic weird Western that's about 90K long. It involves Billy the Kid and the Regulators and flesh-eating monsters. And it's time to kick this one out to the door to some agents, because I've been working on this probably for about 10 years now. So.
Wow. Yeah. That's exciting, though. So many times when we have, you know, guests on and we ask what they're up to and they tell us, I get tired for them. Like, I'm like, oh, I need a nap now just hearing the things that you guys are up to. So, yeah. But, your time is almost up here, and I hate that we have to take a break soon. But you have to promise to come back to the show and see us?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yay. Yay.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you so much, Kevin, for being – oh, well, and before I let you go, let us know where we can find you online.
I'm sort of on Facebook under two Facebooks right now. But my main Facebook is KB Lucia on Facebook, and then I'm on Twitter I'm on Twitter at Kevin B. Lucia, and that's where I hang out most of the time. I do have another Facebook account that I'm running for Cemetery Dance as their trade paperback and ebook editor, called CD Ebook and Paperbacks. But Kevin Lucia is on Facebook and Twitter, and that's where I spend most of my time.
Awesome. And I apologize for getting your last name wrong when I introduced you. But, for all of our listeners out there, go out and buy October Nights by Kevin Lucia. And thank you so much. I can't wait to have you back.
Thank you, and I look forward to coming back.
It's been an absolute pleasure, Kevin. You have a great rest of your evening. Okay.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Have a good night.
Bye-bye. Right, well, it is. My bladder's telling me it's break time, and obviously you need to crack open another box of Chardonnay, so we will be right back.
Is brought to you by Hellbound Books Publishing, purveyors of all manner of dark fiction. You can find the publisher, along with links to all of their available works across platforms, at hellboundbookspublishing.com. In the mood for something steamy to read? Check out erotica author Jennifer Lynn at jenniferlynnerotica.com. You can find James and Xtina at their respective websites, jameslongmore.com for James, and darkpoetprincess.com for Xtina. Don't forget to follow The Panic Room on social media. Facebook unofficial, The Panic Room Radio Show, our Vimeo channel with all of our previous shows, The New Panic Room Radio Show, and come visit our website, www.panicroomradio.com.
Double ball time. just in other places. But the horns, they blowing that sound way on down south. Way on down south, London town. You check out Guitar George, he knows all the chords. Mighty strictly rhythm, he doesn't want to make it cry or sing. This ain't an old guitar, is all he can't afford. When he gets up under the light to play his thing, then Harry doesn't mind if he doesn't make the scene. He's got a daytime job, he's doing alright. He can play the honky tonk like anything, saving it up Friday night with the Sultan.
I do believe we're back. Are you back, Xtina?
I am back. Woo!
No, I hate it when we have to put off a phenomenal reading like that. You know, I was enjoying that.
I know. I feel like
you know,
a bad guy,
one of these days, I'm just gonna let's just let them go. Read the whole damn book, you know, because some of them are just so good. Shame to. But you know, time waits for no man and all of that. So apparently, I don't know who said that. Probably Marty McFly. Probably would be my guess.
And it's always good to leave them wanting more. Definitely. I mean, now I want to know how that ends. And I mean, I can read ahead and read, you know, the rest that he put here, but I don't know if that is the end or not. So that would be sad.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh dear me. So yeah, it is, isn't it? It's just. You know, you get to that point when your brain just refuses to think. You know, I think I'm getting there, actually, you know. And I know we've said this before, you know, I think, oh, you know, it's almost like an end of a week thing, you know. But I've got a whole other bloody day tomorrow. I've got Friday to do stuff. And I've already got my... It's one of those things now, so I've got all my day planned out, and I'm already behind before I even start the day. I'm behind on shit. It's like, well, oh, what's going on? So I'll catch up one day, but I doubt it.
I think 2 years in a row now we've said, you know, next year is going to be a little easier. It's not going to be quite as busy. And then, that hasn't worked out yet.
I remember but saying that at the end of 2019, and look what happened.
Yeah.
So that.
Yeah.
I actually had a conversation with someone today about, and her life is similar. She's a client of mine, and she's very. I'm actually ghostwriting her life story, which is just chaos start to finish. And you know, we were sort of having a good old wine about. But I said, well, to be fair. You know, were it not for the chaos and everything going on, I think we'd be bored.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, there are worse things than being...
God, yeah. Well, the worst thing, just sat, you know, being that, you know, pottering or having a hobby.
I need
a hobby to fill my time. Well, you know, somebody asked me, what hobby, what do you do in your spare time? And I laughed at them. I laughed in their face. What the spare time? Are you having a laugh?
I said.
I go, what is that?
I know.
That?
You know, I sometimes miss the days when I could sit around and read for hours. And now I get, I get in bed and I'm like, I'm going to read tonight. And then my eyes are like so, you know, glazed over from the busy day that I just... wind up playing trivia crack or words with friends and going to sleep.
But you know, I like to crawl to help me get to sleep. I crawl to bed, watch a bit of TV. But sometimes, you know, my eyes are more tired than my brain, and I physically can't. You know, my eyes are just they hurt, and I have to close. I have to turn lights on.
And just
lay there with my eyes shut and just hope that sleep is going to happen along at some point. But. That's the one thing I do miss is being able to sit and read for pleasure. As I said before, you know, we read a lot of stuff. We have a lot of submission, a lot of really, really good stuff. But just to sit and read something because I want to, not because it's a submission or, you know, because I need to read it for a project or whatever. I bought the new Thomas Harris book months ago. And it's on my shelf. It looks great on the shelf, and it's there, and it's an open. And I have no idea when I'm going to have the time to sit and sit. I'm dying to read it. I'm a big Thomas Harris fan, you know, but but I guess it keeps us going. It gets us up in the morning, and you know, so
yeah.
Mustn't grumble. So anyway, so of course on part two of the Jeff Strand show, we've got Jeff Cahill, great friend of the show. He's been on more than me now, so technically speaking, and he's been on hold for 11 minutes, so he's probably written another two novels in that time. So you better bring him on to talk about them, Xtina.
Definitely. For our next guest, we have a four-time nominee of the Bram Stoker Award and winner of the Splatterpunk Award, Jeff Strand. Woo!
Hello.
Hello. Hey, how you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Oh, we're good. We're good. We're good. We're having a good time. We're having a good time, despite being tired and because our circadian rhythms are all over the place. I think we're having fun.
Crazy.
Mm-hmm. How about yourself?
I had a really busy weekend before daylight savings time, so that screwed up my schedule anyway. So the daylight savings time didn't mess with it at all. So I'm fine.
Oh, you know, James, I don't know if you have seen on Facebook, but Jeff and his wife are moving to Tennessee, so they'll be neighbors.
Oh, really?
Really?
I didn't know that.
Hours.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Stay 2 hours away, so it's fine.
You're practically neighbors.
There's like probably 120 miles separating us, so it's still safe.
I'll tell you something, Jeff, I know Xtina, and that is not enough. Seriously. She'll be popping round.
Yeah, it's exciting. No, it's stalking. I'll be in the bushes, and, you know, yeah.
I can believe that.
Really uneasy, I'll know what it is.
Exactly. No, we were just in Gatlinburg over the weekend, and you know, we went to Dollywood and had a great time, and they in Gatlinburg they have over Gatlinburg, I think it's what we did or something, the ski lifts, and when you get to the top there's this bridge you can walk across, and like in the middle of it is just this glass like paneling that you can see all the way down, and I'm terrified of heights, but I did it anyway. And the first time I walked across, I didn't look down at all. I was like, no, I will die if I look down. But coming back, I did. I looked down for a whole 3 seconds, maybe, you know, I did. Right. And I didn't die. So, that's very exciting because I really thought I would. So, yeah, there was a lot of fun. And
I did something like that in Chicago. And
yeah.
You know that they're not going to let tourists crash through the glass to their deaths, but it is still terrifying. And they show you how safe it is. You're on really, really thick plexiglass. Something like nothing bad can happen. But when you look down, it's like, I'm going to die. I'm going to break through this ice thin layer of glass and plummet to my death. Even though they didn't have the insurance to allow that, it's still terrifying.
I know. Oh, my gosh. And then at the top of the mountain when, you know, the ski lift let us out and you get to see how beautiful everything is. And they had these rocking chairs that were pretty, in my opinion, they looked like they're pushed right up to the edge of the mountain where you could just sit and relax and you know, rock to you plunge to your death. And, of course, like, I got up the nerve to sit down in one of these, and I'm sitting there, and I'm a little nervous, but I'm okay. And I'm like, I'm going to have to get up. And when I get up, I'm going to lose my balance, and I'm going to fall off the mountain and die. I mean, I was terrified of just standing up. Then, of course, my son, he's big goof, and he's also kind of klutzy. So he's standing, you know, and I'm sure he's safe. But, again, in my mind, he's right at the edge of this cliff, and you know, he keeps doing the whole whoa look at me, and I'm like, please stop it. And at one point I was like, do you want to see me cry? You know, I was so scared. But you know, we all made it down the mountain, nobody died, so everybody, everything's good, all's good. That
I'm
ends
glad
all
you and your family are still alive.
That would have
been
really
inconsiderate to make James host the show.
I would, as they say, the show must go on. I'd be here nonetheless.
That's
it would have
so,
been a bummer,
you know, who'd
episode.
You...
I would have been on here saying, well, this isn't any fun. We have to pretend that we're all sad, and it would have been a really depressing episode.
Well, you know,
well, you know,
I
like to think we'd power through it, Jeff, to be honest with you.
We'd power through it, you know.
Being professional.
It's a joke, but it would,
what
yes.
he's not telling
episode.
You... What he's not telling you, Jeff, is he has absolutely no idea who's on the show until I tell him. So he would just be on the air by himself right now.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. Absolutely. But you know, and I like to think it would still be a good show.
I think you could do it.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I think an hour and a half
of just me would be, I think, more than most people could stand, to be honest.
I would be listening from beyond the grave, though, don't worry.
Well, that's nice. Thank you. That's a comfort.
Right. So Jeff is here to talk to us about his book, Deathless, and it's the sequel to Pressure. And I did ask him for a tagline, and he just refused to give me one. So now he's going to have to tell us what it's about.
The sequel to Pressure. I've actually been trying to give away as little as possible. I'm sort of promoting it in phases. So phase one is, hey, it's sequel to Pressure. If you like Pressure, you'll like Deathless. Do you want to know what happens next? This is the book. And at some point, when people are like, well, you need to give us more, you jerk, then I'll start to add a little bit more of the premise. But basically, it's sort of Pressure came out, the hardcover edition of Pressure came out in 2006. And so the hardcover edition of Deathless from the same publisher, Earthling Publications, that has shipped. So happy customers have their copies of that. The ebook and paperback won't be out until November 30th. So it's so far a really small pool of people have their hands on it. But because the book was published about 15 years later, the story covers like the next 15 years and the characters' lives. So Pressure took place over about 20 years. Deathless takes place over about 15 years. So it's sort of the same setup where you've got four parts and each part has a fairly long time gap between them.
I have read so many of your books, and I hate to say that I have not read Pressure yet. And
you should. It's good.
I hear that, and I think the reason that I have not yet is because it's not one of the more funny ones, right? I mean, when I first read, Blister was the first book I read by you, and I just loved the humor so much that, anytime I see one of the books that aren't maybe as funny, I'm like, oh, I just want one of the funny ones. But, you know, I remember reading Dweller, which wasn't, big into the comedy part, and when I finished that, I was like, I think this is my favorite Jeff Strand book. And I cried, and I think I even messaged you on Facebook and was mad at you for making me cry so hard over, you know.
I still feel bad about that.
You should. So I think that, you know, part of me is like, you know, I don't want to read it because it's not funny. But then I also say to myself, well, you love Dweller and it wasn't. So I just have to do it. I have it on my Kindle, so I just have to do it because I can't
read
Deathless.
There's actually a lot of humor. There's actually a lot of humor in Pressure and also Deathless. It just kind of gets overshadowed by how dark the book is.
Right. Well, I remember that from Bring Her Back was, you know, I would, you know, read some of the one-liners or something that were, you know, that he was thinking. And it's funny because I'm reading to myself and I'll look up thinking, does anybody get the humor here? Did anybody else see how funny this is? You know? I definitely think that. I don't think you could write a book without some humor in it.
If they paid me a lot of money to do it, I could, but otherwise, like, yeah, I like to have a lot of comedy in myself.
Yeah, it's the best. It really is. So, and I think you have an excerpt as well to read for us, right?
Yeah, you better not cut me off.
I'll try not to.
Mine is much shorter. We'll get through it in plenty of time. All right, there's no setup needed because this is literally the very beginning of the book. So this is from Deathless. I married the first girl I ever kissed. This left me ill-equipped to re-enter the dating scene as a damaged widower. I'd met a beautiful, funny, and charming woman named Christine. I made it clear that I wasn't ready for a romantic relationship yet, and she said to take all the time I needed. What she actually meant was, you have 6 months to sort your shit out. At which point she told me it was time for us to go our separate ways. I didn't want to lose her, so I put my arms around her and gave her a passionate kiss. Then I started crying. As you might guess, that pretty much ended it. I never saw Christine again except outside of a movie theater a couple months later where she was holding hands with a big burly guy who might as well have been wearing a shirt that said, no emotional baggage. On my 32nd birthday, which was about 3 years after I buried my family, my friend Jeremy insisted that it was time for me to start dating again. He was extremely persistent, and he had plenty of opportunities to be persistent because he was living in the apartment next to mine. At least he wasn't living with me anymore. He'd gone to California to pursue a career in acting. 1 year, a couple of minor roles, and a heroin addiction later, I'd received a distraught phone call in the middle of the night and drove from Tucson to Los Angeles to pick him up. He'd stayed at my place for several months, but when the apartment next door became available, we both agreed that our friendship would benefit from seeing less of each other. I have zero interest in dating, I told him. Why? Just not interested. That's not an answer. Who would want me? Lots of women would want you, said Jeremy. It's not like you're ugly. I never said I was ugly. I was long past the point of being self-conscious about the large purple birthmark on my chin. You're nice. You've got a stable job. Every once in a while, you say something witty. Sure, there are dark things in your past that would cause most women to run away screaming, but they aren't all going to run away screaming. If I can get laid, you can get laid. When did you get laid? I meant hypothetically. I wasn't sure how dating would even work for a guy like me. Should I parse out the revelations over multiple dates or just spill everything at once in an avalanche of romance-killing confessions? First of all, I wasn't ready to take off my wedding band, so I'd immediately have to explain that I was not some scumbag cheating on his wife. And if she asked how Melanie died, I couldn't say car accident or terminal illness or some other answer where we could both acknowledge that it was very sad and then move on with the fun part of the date. Nope. Melanie had been murdered horribly. I hadn't actually seen it happen because I was chained up in another room. I wouldn't tell my date what they looked like when I finally got free and found their bodies. That was something I would never, will never talk about. Their bodies, my date asks, plural? Yes. My 5-year-old daughter, Tracy Ann, had also been murdered. Did I handle it well? Oh, you mean apart from shoving a revolver in my mouth? So now I'm the guy whose wife and young daughter were savagely murdered. Maybe my date drops the subject and we discuss whether or not we want to start with crab rangoon as an appetizer, or maybe she wants to delve further, see what kind of scary issues I've got going on because of my experience. Did I know the person who did it? Oh, hell yeah. Darren Rust. I met him when I was 12, when we were both at Branford Academy boarding school. That's also where I met Jeremy and our other friend, Peter. The four of us shared a room. Darren was a rotten little creep back then, but when our paths crossed again in college, he seemed to be a completely different person. We became friends. And then we very much stopped being friends. Nobody's going to say, why, I'd never date a man whose wife and daughter died ghastly deaths. Maybe they'd even think they could fix me, bring some happiness and emotional stability into my life. But the next revelation is the big one. I'd murdered an innocent woman, a mother. I had to do it. Darren forced me. By doing it, I stopped him from killing a little girl. So really, it was almost like I was a great big goddamn hero. Superman could stop a runaway train with his amazing strength. I could chop off a woman's head with a hatchet. I had no choice, I explained, as my hypothetical date decides she isn't hungry for crab rangoon anymore. It was at least quick, though, right? My date asks, if she hasn't already fled. One swing of the axe, no suffering. Oh, sure. Sure, her head popped off really quick, I lie. There's barely even any blood. So yeah, my reluctance to date wasn't about my birthmark. That is from Deathless.
Wow, I really enjoyed that. And now I have to read Pressure. You said you can't tell us a whole lot about Deathless, but, can you say anything more about Pressure? I mean, I just feel like I'm missing like this whole piece. Now I definitely want to, I have to read this. So again, my,
Pressure
signed copy.
Pressure is basically the 20-year friendship between a guy and his friend who is an aspiring serial killer. And so it covers them when they're children in boarding school, covers them when they meet again in college, and then to later phases in adulthood. And then Deathless picks up from where Pressure left off.
Speaking of serial killers, has anybody seen the premiere of Dexter New Blood?
No.
No, I saw the first five seasons of Dexter and didn't watch the last three.
You know, I watched it and I liked it. You know, the ending of Dexter could have definitely been better. I would not have done what they did, but I liked the show as a whole, and I was excited for the premiere of the new show, and I definitely liked it, and I will continue to watch it. Hopefully they don't mess it up too badly. So yeah, I enjoyed it, and I can't wait to see the next episode. So. Yay, there's that. Who didn't love Dexter? I mean, you know, did you like Dexter, James?
Do you know, I saw, I think, one of the early episodes, and it didn't really grab me, to be honest.
Really? You know,
yeah.
My son says
the
same thing.
You think it would. It was the same with... Same with The Walking Dead. You know, you'd think that'd be right up my street, you know, big zombie fan that.
Yeah.
I literally saw the first one. I thought I saw a few of the season where they were in the prison thing. I just didn't.
That's my favorite.
No, didn't. I don't know. It's got, for me, you know, to invest in, you know, something that's 8, 9, whatever seasons, it's got to be fucking good. And it just didn't. You know, no.
So, James, you know, my son was reading, Salem's Lot, right? He finished Salem's Lot the other day, his first Stephen King book. And you've seen the kind of books that he reads.
Mm-hmm.
He was not impressed with Stephen King.
Oh, really?
He said it was sloppy. It was one of the words he used to describe it.
Wow, interesting.
Like,
yeah.
He's very snobbish in his book reading, and I was very surprised. I thought for sure once, you know, I almost thought I was spoiling him. You know, if he reads, you know, like Stephen King, he's going to stop reading all the other stuff he reads. And no. He did not. He read the whole thing, so that's something. But he was like, it's sloppy, and it wasn't very.
Yeah.
It was just so weird. Yeah. So.
Wow.
Yeah. Take that,
Steven. I can't imagine
Steven.
How sloppy he thinks my stuff is.
Well, he reads, like, you know, I can't even. What's the guy's name? Dostoevsky.
And
yeah,
he reads all of those. But I must admit, I think Salem's Lot was one of my favorite King novels. Actually, I remember reading that many years ago. It was a good book. But horses for courses, you know. He's obviously, you know, his son is obviously incredibly well read, you know. But I mean, I've read some of the classics, you know, over the years, and. You know, not been impressed. I mean, 1984, it was okay. You know, the message was good and everything, but the writing is not brilliant.
Yes, yes.
I'll tell you what I did enjoy, The Godfather. Although the one thing, all I could think of so far through it was, you know, Mario Puzo, I guess, and or his editors were not fans of the Oxford comma. and it's spoilt the book for me in many ways.
Oh, that is sad.
Mm.
So, Jeff, tell us what you're working on now. I mean, are you, because if you're one of those authors who writes the end and then chapter one, which I just, I don't know how you step out of one world and into another so quickly.
I'm working on a book called Creepa, which I've been working on for a long time because I've been also working on lots of behind-the-scenes stuff and lots of movie stuff that I'm not allowed to talk about. So I can say that at this point, I can announce that I am working on the screenplay version of one of my books for a major studio. And probably
that's fantastic.
The next time you have me on the show, I'll be like blabbing all kinds of amazing secrets. But for right now,
brilliant. I should look forward to that.
Because people are like, wow, you had so many books out in 2020 and 2021, you're being a lazy piece of crap slacker. And like, no, I'm working. It's just not stuff you're seeing.
Yeah,
so,
you're going to get messages from me at like all sorts of times, and I'm going to be like, is it this book? And then the next message, is it this book? And then the next message, oh, it's got to be this book. So, and you won't be able to tell me anything, and then I'll cry again.
You'll eventually narrow it down. I don't have an infinite number of books, so at some point... You'll be like, maybe, and then you're like, oh, I get it.
I'll have to try that then. Yeah. No, I always have so much fun when you're on the show because I read so many of your books and I fangirl so hard. I was talking about you tonight with a friend of mine. And, you know, because I talk to her about books all the time. I'm like, oh, my gosh, you've got to read Jeff Strand. And then I'm like, you got to read this book. And then I remember a different one. I'm like, no, wait, you got to start with this one. And then, of course, I think of another one. Oh, wait, you got to read this one. So, you know, I think she's really confused right now. So.
Yeah, well, I've got lots of movie stuff going on where it's most of it I'm not involved at all. So I get the little updates, and it moves really, really slow. And then I wrote a couple of them on spec where it's like I wrote, I adapted The Greatest Zombie Movie Ever and Cutter myself for a production company up in Canada called the Binge Brothers. So that they're letting me talk about. But this other one is the first time I've been hired at WGA rates to adapt my own work. So it's a big step forward, but I'm not allowed to like blab the details yet. But next time I'm on, I will share all the news.
I would we'll definitely hold you to that. And yeah, I remember, I think it was at the end of last year, the last time you were on the show, which seemed like it was so long ago. And I was like, you know, we got to get Jeff back to talk about, you know, I don't even care if you've written a book. You just got to come back and talk about something. Sure. Oh, I saw a post and I of yours, and I commented. It was about the show You. You know, I cannot get into it, and I wanted to so badly because I read the book, you know, when it first came out, and I loved it. I loved the writing style. It was just very unique, and I was captivated by Joe, and so I was so excited when, you know, it was going to be a show, and I watched the first probably 5 episodes twice, and I can't do it. I can't do it, and I feel very sad because I wanted to so bad, and you said you really enjoyed it, and you, like, binged it or something, right?
Yeah, I don't binge anything, but my version of binge is it's the only thing I watch, but it's still over a really long period of time.
I get that.
No,
yeah.
I thought it was great. We loved the first 2 seasons. Actually, literally just started season 3 tonight. Watched about 20 minutes of it, so which is how we watch TV, like 20 minutes at a time, and then eventually.
So like James.
Quote unquote binge watched
yeah.
the season, but it took several weeks to get through it.
No, you have to read the book, and I think you'll see why. I mean, it was just, you know, it was something about the way she wrote it. And even, I don't even think Hidden Bodies was on the same page as you was. I mean, it was just, it was, stood out for me, and it was really good. And then they changed some things. You know what I mean? They always do when it comes to shows, but some of they added, like, the little boy in the apartment that Joe lived in at the beginning. There was no little boy. You know, I mean, just the weird little things like that. I'm like, who are these people? And I don't know. So I want to.
To 10 hours. So.
Yeah, no, I get it. And I do want to enjoy it. And another thing, I've been watching The Outsider. The Stephen King mini series thing. Have you seen that?
Yeah, that was good. I enjoyed that. Yeah.
I have had 2 episodes to go for like 3 weeks now, and I, you know, the boyfriend thinks that I have a problem with completing something because then it'll be over, but I don't know if that's it. I mean, I've already kind of, you know, I mean, we know what it is, and I think for me that was the you know, the cool part is, what is it? And now that I know, I'm like, you know, I already know what it is. But I like the sheriff guy. He's my favorite. I really enjoy him. He always looks so sad, and I feel so bad for him all the time. I think I just watch for him.
I think it's like quite a few King things, it sort of peters out towards the end. Like you say, it's really good.
Yeah,
the build-up
is
really good, and you got your guessing, and the premise is pretty good. And then the last, I mean, I battled through all of it. I was a little bit disappointed towards the end, you know, the last episode or so. But I tell you, I watched the first one this week, Yellow Jackets. If you get a chance to see, I think it's on Showtime or HBO or something. Absolutely fucking brilliant. Seriously, find it, watch it, and binge it. And I don't think you can binge it because you've got to wait for episodes like the good old days. But if the first episode is anything to go by, it's going to be phenomenal. So watch it.
Awesome. I'll put them on the list.
Mm.
Mm. And Jeff, with your move to Tennessee, I remember when you moved to Georgia from Florida, and you just, you know, and you complained about how cold it was, and you keep going like more north. Like, what's that about?
Well, Chattanooga has about the same weather as Atlanta, and so the first year we were in Atlanta, it was like, what the hell is this? Because they're like, oh, if it snows, it's like a light dusting that's gone in minutes. Like, no, this is full on snow that stuck around for 2 days. But then it got better and I got a little bit used to it. So it was 1 year of this is way too cold, and then 3 years of, okay, this is colder than I would like, but it's tolerable. But Chattanooga is basically the same weather as Atlanta. So I'm going to make it. I don't know if we're going any further north. We'll do field trips to Nashville and Knoxville and that kind of stuff. But I think as far as a permanent residence, I think we're as far north as we're going to get.
Yeah, it doesn't get too bad here either. I mean, the first year I was here, we had a pretty good snow, and I think that actually stuck around for like a week or more. But it's not normal. It's not normal. I think last year we had a little bit of snow in October, which is really weird. And then we had Christmas Day it snowed, which that was beautiful. And that can stay. So I'm hoping for another white Christmas. That would be great. But, I think it's – oh, my gosh, yeah, it is. It's time to – we're getting – I think it's time for our show to be over. And I hate that because I was having so much fun talking to you, and I don't have to tell you – that you have to promise to come back because, you know, I just start bothering you and stalking you on Facebook until
you'll be able to just pop round to his house, Xtina, and just knock on the door. So you've got to come on the show, Jeff. So there's no escape now.
That's true. And I can't wait to have Lynn back on the show either. So you guys both got to, you know, come on the show. And, Yeah, I can't wait to have you back. And everybody who is listening, go out and buy Deathless by Jeff Strand. And thank you so much for coming back on the show, Jeff.
Right now you can't actually buy it, but if you're listening to this in 3 weeks, you can get it. So November
3rd. Marvelous. Marvelous.
Awesome.
Thank you so much, Jeff. Joining us, Jeff. It's always a pleasure. Right. Absolute pleasure.
I'll be back soon.
Good.
Yay.
Okay. Okay, have a great rest of your evening.
All right, you too.
Okay, bye-bye. Right, time has beaten us again, and it is, I'm afraid, time to say goodnight, Xtina.
Goodnight, Xtina.
Goodnight.
I'll be learning.
And the 14th, I'll be burning. But there's something in the air.